Hello, and welcome to I Am the Egg Pods with me, Chris Shaw. The Egg Pods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this, amazingly the 50th episode, it's a delight to welcome back friend of the podcast, David Quantick.
Hello, Chris. 50, I can't believe it. It seems like only yesterday we were doing number 17.
I know, time flies. Oddly enough, we're doing this in the week that Paul's announced McCartney 3's on its way. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm very excited, but I'm more excited because the marketing wants me to be excited, because it is effectively just another solo album. A lot of my younger friends are going, oh, it's going to be McCartney. It's not going to be McCartney 2. It's not going to be McCartney 1. I'm slightly worried because, as we know, in 1970, McCartney came out when he left the Beatles. In 1980, he came out when he left Wings. And the only person he can leave now is himself. So it might be Paul to split rumours in 2021.
So which brings us to the album that you've picked, which is Paul's 2018 album, Egypt Station. So why did you pick this one?
I picked it because it's absolutely brilliant, because it's got some nice memories for me in that I went, somebody bought me tickets to see him play in Vienna on this tour.
Wow.
So, and there's a blanket involved, but we'll talk about that later. And also because I really think that his albums of this millennium have been very much underrated. And I think Egypt Station is in my top five solo albums. I don't know what I'd move. It's certainly one of the best albums of the 21st century. And because it's come at this stage of his career, it doesn't get all the love and attention that it deserves.
You said about the promotion. I mean, obviously, you'd signed with Capitol. And the teasers that Capitol have been doing, they're doing the same thing now for McCartney 3. But it did build up so much excitement for the new Paul album. And I think the promotion, I think things like the James Corden show, he was on all the American chat shows. He really pushed this one.
It's always difficult with Paul, because sometimes, because he's always there, there's always this element of like, Paul's got an album out. And in the 80s or the 90s, it was often, oh yeah, it's a new Paul McCartney album, let's give it a go, okay. But he's rediscovered the trick of people going, Paul McCartney's got an album out! Yeah. And that's so hard to do in a 60-year career. But the Corden thing was brilliant. I mean, I enjoyed the fact that he refers to James Corden as Corden, so obviously he wasn't that overwhelmed. But he managed to make the whole thing of, like, being at the Philharmonic fresh and new. Paul McCartney's in Liverpool. He's been before, you know. But, yeah, the whole campaign was really well done and was pretty exciting.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, people criticise James Corden, but I think I'd defy anybody to do a better job than he did. And Paul seemed to really enjoy it.
It worked really well. I think they had a good working relationship, and the footage was a good mixture of revealing and exciting. And people under 20 will always get thrilled by a curtain being pulled back to reveal Paul McCartney.
So the album was released on the 7th of September 2018. It was its first US number one since Tug of War, amazingly.
Crikey.
And it was recorded in LA, London and Paul's home studio. And I think the key thing about this is the production, because apart from Paul, he was working with Greg Kurstin, Ryan Tedder and Zach Skelton. It reminds me of Memory Almost Full, as all the singles are very sort of poppy. And if you just hear the singles, it can kind of, you know, you forget there's a lot of other stuff on here. It's not just a pop album.
Yeah, New was kind of weird to me, because you're absolutely right about Memory Almost Full, which is, in my opinion, the best album of the 21st century. Memory Almost Full.
Can we ask the other four?
No, because Paul hasn't made them yet. No, only joking. No, because I just have to shift some things around in my head. But I mean, it's a bit like a companion to Memory Almost Full. It's like New comes out in the middle. New is a brilliant move. It's lots of, you know, it's fresh, lots of producers. It's not the Macca sound. It does sound a bit like Free as a Bird, and it's the voice of one of the Beatles grafted to a contemporary production. Mm. But you're absolutely right. Egypt Station, Memory Almost Full have got really full pop rock productions that recall Paul's best work without being too much like them. And they've got some of his best tunes. And yeah, the early 2000s albums like Chaos and Creation and Driving Rain have got quite a thin, depressed sound. Whereas these are really full on. These are really, I don't care. This is Paul's equivalent of those recent Bob Dylan albums where he's like, I don't care, I'm going to make a loud rockabilly album. Paul's like, I don't care, I'm going to make a loud pop album.
Unashamedly.
Absolutely.
And the artwork is obviously based on an old painting he did back in 1988, which kind of defines the album.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just dealing with a... Come in and say hello to Chris and then go away.
Hello!
You'll never watch television again if you don't go right now and close the door. You can play later. Close that door. Why? The weird thing is I haven't actually got any children, so... Anyway, so yeah, the artwork you were saying.
Yeah, it's a lovely piece. And, you know, he's taken the artwork and he's worked what would have been a collection of songs by using the artwork as a title. He's given it not a concept as such, but a theme.
A theme, and he's done his little bits of linking music, which he likes to do. Yeah, no one ever suggested this was a concept album, but... And my mum's calling me. I can't believe this. I'm sorry, could you pause it?
Yeah.
And there we, okay, we're back.
That's all right.
You're going to get a recording of me talking to my mum.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be 3 minutes of Beatle talking.
Yeah, it's just basically three generations of my family united at last in the egg pod.
So, well, Egypt Station as a theme. I think that's kind of it, isn't it? We can... So should we move on to the album itself?
Absolutely.
And we start with track one, Opening Station, which... sets the scene.
Yeah, it's just a really nice bit of classic Paul stuff. He's got a very long tradition from Sgt. Pepper through Band on the Run and various other albums as well of doing this kind of thing. It's a nice little... It's the exact equivalent of the orchestra tuning up at the start of Pepper. It's a little bit of anticipation, a little bit of a buzz saying, we're going on a journey. Oh, it's mysterious. What's Egypt Station, Paul? I don't know. Me and the boys got together one day. You know how to do it. Reminds me of 96. Yeah. All right, Paul, you don't know either. Fine, let's have a song.
I got crows at my window, dogs at my door. I don't think I can take anymore. What am I doing wrong? I don't know.
And then that segues straight into track two, which is quite a melancholy start, and it's sort of pickety third Paul flitting back and forth from major to minor. It's I Don't Know. Oh. This is a double A side with Come On To Me.
Oh god, I am blown away by this song. It's a shame for this conversation that it's the opening song, because I sort of will lose interest in talking about things afterwards. It's so great. We've talked before, everyone's talked about how the Beatles are not a blues band, they're a rock and roll band. How, you know, everything the Stones did, they didn't. The Beatles are variety and pop. This is the nearest that Paul's got to writing a really good blues song. It's amazing. Yeah. The opening lyrics, which I can never remember, about crows, you know, dogs at the window.
I've got crows at my window, yeah.
Are extraordinary. It's a really un-Paul-like lyric. It's very much like Your Blues by John. But it's a magnificent song. It's so McCartney, you know, the major minor thing. It's like, starts with really bleakly, and it's like, what's the point of life? You're going, I don't know. Which is classic McCartney. Mm. It goes back to... Down in the Jungle Living in a Tent, that one, you know, what's the point, what's the use of worrying, no use on Mamounia, which is the whole Who Cares later on in this album takes the theme. It's a magnificent song, and so lucky, because as I say, a man I work with called Mike Knowles, who's a friend, bought us tickets to go and see Paul McCartney in Vienna on this tour, and we got the VIP tickets, which meant that we could watch the rehearsal, which is not really a rehearsal, it's more a special set. And he opened with I Don't Know, which he didn't do in the main set. So, as you can imagine, really? I'm like, wow. I would never have got to see him do that song live in a billion years. But he did it, and it was absolutely, absolutely fantastic. And you can see this at home, viewers. No, you can't. We got a pack of Macca stuff. And I'm just going to do a little satirical moment here, because... A friend of mine called Steve Perrin, who was in a great Manchester New Wave band called The Distractions, was clearing out his attic and he found some paraphernalia and he went to see Wings in 1972. This is the famous tour where Paul McCartney threw frisbees into the audience. And he's,
oh, he's got one. Red Rose Speedway.
Red Rose Speedway, promotional, Frisbee, immaculate condition. Worth, wow. I think, about 150 quid. But Stephen very kindly gave it to me. So, my satirical joke is that in 1972, when you went to see Paul McCartney, you got a Frisbee. In 2018, when you went to see him, you got a blanket. This is the Paul McCartney Freshen Up Tour blanket, which is coming.
It's very fluffy.
It's very fluffy. I mean, considering it's a couple of years old, it's in great nick. Yeah, so that's the state. I mean, God knows if Paul and I are still around in 20 years' time. Probably not. There'll probably be an iron lung or a room in a home.
A nappy.
A nappy. Oh, God, that's not bleak. Yeah, the promotional McCartney 9 nappy coming to you now.
I'm very chuffed to say I got the McCartney 3 dice the other day. I was very overwhelmed.
How did you get those? That.
Somebody followed the Eggport account, and then I saw they worked for Capital, so I just pounced and said, oh, any chance you can get me to speak to Paul? I said, oh, probably not, but we are giving some gifts away.
Wow.
And, yeah, so I don't know what I'm going to do with those. I'm going to lose them, basically.
Well, just put them in the... I've lost quite a few things, but the blanket won't last forever. But, yeah, I'm very envious of the dice, although, of course, they could just be some dice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good, but you know, it's a cheap way of promoting, I guess.
It was a great campaign. It's a shame we can't talk about it because we haven't heard it. But yeah, getting people excited with a picture of dice, not bad. But it's all right. Sleep tight. I will take the strain.
You're fine. Love of mine. I don't know. As you say, yeah, it's typical Paul. He was feeling very... I mean, he said he wrote this after going through a difficult period. And he said, like people have, nothing sort of madly serious or anything, but just one of those days when it's like, oh, what am I doing wrong here? You know? Quote.
You know? Yeah.
But the chorus just sums... It's typical Paul, but it's all right. Sleep tight. I will take the strain. You're fine, love of mine. You will feel no pain.
I mean, it makes me cry sometimes, this song. It's just, yeah, the bit that you just quoted is fun. It's so Paul to go, crows at my window, dogs at my door, can't take any more. And then he's just like, it's all right, sleep tight, I will take the strain. It's like, is him singing to himself? Or is he singing to someone, or is someone else singing to him? And the great thing about it is it would work as a duet. You could reverse all the roles.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the opening track, and it's a weird, slow, bluesy ballad, so he must know how good it is.
Yeah. I'm sure somebody has mentioned this before, but... I've got a theory that whenever Paul uses the word rain, I always think he's singing about tears.
Mm. Driving rain.
There's a whole bunch.
Yeah. Too much rain.
Too much rain. Yeah, it could be. And, of course, that one's got Mr. Bellamy, which is probably a sister song to that. Mr. Bellamy is the massively underrated, really strange Paul song that could have been on Sgt. Pepper. Such an odd song. But really, you know, the guy on the ledge, leave me alone. That's a metaphor for so many different things. Let's see if we can talk about every track on Memory Almost Full during this. I saw you flash a smile that seemed to me to say you wanted so much more than casual conversation. I swear I caught a look before you turned away. Now I don't see the point resisting your temptation. We move on to track 3, Come On To Me. Yeah, Come On To Me. It's sort of in the tradition of Dance Tonight. It's one of Paul's I've just knocked off a song, jaunty, possibly meaningless. Did you come on to me? Will I come on to you? If you come on to me, will I come on to you? It's like, not great in the lyrical department, just lots of clever rhymes, interruption, conversation, introduction, interruption. But it's really good. It's just a jaunty number. And it's got a really beefy guitar part. Dang, 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 dang. He's got a great... Let's have a bit of time to talk about his long-time band, Rusty and Abe and all the other guys, who, it's interesting, the last 20 years of Paul's career... Generally find when producers have tried to do something new, replace the band, maybe try a few new sounds. It's generally not as good when they don't try something new. Don't replace the band. He's got a really great relationship with these musicians. They're one of the best bands he's been in.
Oh, absolutely. You think Wicks has been there back in the 80s?
Yeah, he certainly gets... They can't get him out. He's like the Denny Lane of the present.
And I think this is a bit of a theme here. Not for the last time. This is kind of Randy Paul.
Oh,
which
yes.
Can be a bit disconcerting.
We will be coming across Randy Paul again on this album. But yeah, he seems
not
to be...
Not literally.
No, we won't be coming across... I was going to say he's been at the monkey glands, but as a vegetarian, he's probably been at the vegetarian monkey glands, should such a thing exist. And of course, if Laura's listening, I'm not suggesting Paul is taking penile stimulants. No, all power to him. God, I'm half his age and I can barely get up the stairs, so... He's doing pretty well. But yes, Horny Paul is a new direction in his music.
It is. I mean, he was 76 when he released this. And it gives us all a bit of hope, I think, doesn't it?
76, in an age where most men are 82. It gives us all hope and it gives women fear that the old people's homes are going to be... Anyway, Zimmerlust. Yeah.
As part of this promotion as well, Paul did a surprise show at Abbey Road. And I was contacted actually by one of the listeners called Eleanor Gray.
Oh, I know Eleanor. Yeah, she's great.
Know her?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's lovely. And there was a competition on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. And you had to create a video saying why you deserve to go. It's one of these last minute emergency things. And she was basically saying she thought Paul should make up for the missed opportunity because she'd flown all the way from Melbourne to Tokyo to see him in concert and the tour was cancelled. I think she had a DM a couple of days later saying, yep, meet us on Monday at Abbey Road.
Wow.
And she's given me a quote and she was saying, when I look back at the show, I feel that there's something so incredibly pure in those intermittent shots of my friends in the crowd. At one early point in the show, Paul was describing the first time they entered Studio 2 being little Beatles, who were only allowed to enter in the tradesman's entrance. Paul described George as having a black eye as a result of a fight at the cavern. And at that moment, the camera cut to me with smudged black eye in Isla and tears streaming down my face. I suddenly felt so overwhelmed to hear one of those whimsical stories I'd been collecting for decades. The casual nature of it broke my heart.
Oh,
which is lovely.
Oh, that is absolutely great.
It reminds me, again, I think I've said it before, but when we went to see him at Hyde Park, and of all the songs, it was All My Loving. And it was, you know, not particularly an emotional song, but there were people around us in tears. It was so surreal.
Yeah, I mean, it gets you that because it is a transmission from an era of your life. I mean, I've got in a drawer over here my 1962 to 1967 cassette. And it's a quite duff cassette. It doesn't play proper treble. It's been trodden on several times. It's probably not in its first box, but it really means a lot to me, and All My Loving's on that. So if I were to hear that song at a concert, it would take me back to me sitting in my bedroom.
Yeah.
I sat around all day. I used to get stoned. I like to get wasted. But these days I don't, 'cause I'm happy with you. Got lots of good things to do. Oh yeah.
So we move on to track 4, Happy With You.
Oh yeah. Gosh, this is lovely. It's in the kind of Blackbird, Bluebird, Jenny Wren tradition, except for once it's not actually about a bird. It's a really beautiful melody. It got a lot of mentions at the time because of Paul admitting that he used to get stoned, which is not really a massive revelation.
No.
I think
the revelation is that he used to.
Used to. It's like, yeah, when did you stop? Right, you didn't write a song about it. Maybe go back over the lyrics and see which of the sad ones are about him stopping the spliff. No, it's a classic. Just looking at the lyrics, you know, hear the clear robin sing, walk a bluebell carpet. watch the children playing games, catch a moon and drop it. It's just one of his lovely little gentle watching the day go by lyrics. It's a really nice, really sweet song.
Yeah, such a nice to hear acoustic, Paul. And you got him doing his vocal percussion that, you know, they used on Let Them In or That'd Be Something, that kind of thing. And the Blackbird allusion, I do agree with it. It's basically the same thing, acoustic guitar, tapping his feet, although you've got a big bass drum pounding on this. But it's beautiful. And I think, again, the lyrics, when you say the chorus, is so poetic. And it's almost like the verse, he's deliberately rhyming bad with sad, very basic verse. But like you say, catch a moon, let it drop, hear the gentle mantle roll. It's beautiful pastoral poetry almost.
He's got, I mean, it's interesting, the kind of simple, sad, glad rhymes, because he's really got no problem with being basic and just saying, I love you, and very simple rhymes. Mm. He doesn't feel the need to be Cole Porter or George Gershwin or be clever in stuff. He's quite happy to be plain and simple. And I think that goes to the heart of him as a songwriter.
Then we move into another single from the album, track 5, Who Cares?
Yeah. This is just great. It's, again, we keep saying classic McCartney, but it's got one of his great riffs, like tracks on Memory Almost Full. It must be quite hard work to come up with basic riffs when you've been writing songs for 60 years. Just sit down and go, dang, dang, dang. That sounds good to me. But it really works. Yeah. And it's, again, it's the classic McCartney thing of, who cares? That's a bit of a surprise. Paul saying, who cares? Who cares? I do. It's fantastic. Mentions rain again. Who cares what the idiots say? It's a bizarre, slightly bizarre, twisty lyric, because it starts off going, who cares what people say? And then going, who knows about the pain in your heart? Who cares? I do. It's like, are we talking about people caring or not care? So he twists it. Who cares? I care. It's obvious, but it's excellent. And it's just, it's like people don't write enthusiastic, optimistic songs that aren't qualifier massive anthems these days. If you write an anthem nowadays, it's always hammered into your head. Oh, we're having an anthem. Oh, this is a song for the lost. Yeah, all right, mate, calm down a bit. Have you considered about a song for the lost who don't want to be deafened? And that is one of those. It's a lovely, proper, brilliant song.
Yeah, it's kind of a modern version of Somebody Who Cares from Tug of War, but more forthright.
Very much more forthright.
I do have a theory on this, but I can't use it for the podcast, so I might fade this bit out.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's about... But that's my theory.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, again, probably off the record, a former colleague of my wife's... Maybe don't put that in.
No, I won't. It's always the best bits I can't use.
But yeah. But no, it's a lovely song. Yeah, message for support for somebody, perhaps. But it's lovely.
Yeah, good for Paul.
I just want to know.
Then we move on to track 6. It's Naughty Bad Boy to Your Room, Paul. For you.
Oh, yeah. It's, I like this, but it should have been on New. It doesn't fit in, which is what people always say when they don't like things. But the production is kind of much more contemporary for 2018. It's got all the little naggy hooks that you get on like a K-pop record or an Ariana Grande song. And I don't think it quite suits the song. And also, whether or not I would have sex with Paul McCartney is a different thing. but it possibly isn't. Most other 76-year-old men, if they came up to me and said, I'd like to fire you, I might have to run. And I appreciate that Paul has said, I'm actually saying for you. It's a bit ambiguous, like when we did blah, blah, blah. But it's like, no, it's not ambiguous. You are using a euphemism for the F word, Paul. Stop messing us around. Did Judge as a song. It's great. It's the producer, Zach Skelton.
Greg Kirsten and Zach Skelton.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's slightly different. He's done a great job. And it's a great song. It's just the combination of the contemporary production. It's a bit, I was going to say it's a bit like Kanye West doing Yesterday, but I've got a horrible feeling that Kanye West has actually attempted Yesterday. It's odd. It stands out on this record quite strongly. But, you know, that happens. Paul's often done similar things to that before. And I like it.
It sounds like something somebody 50 years his junior would release. But Paul was always feeding off contemporary music, even, you know, back old Bloody Old Blada or Goodnight Tonight.
So, yeah. Although what was interesting was that he always did it. I think I thought about this the other day. Whenever he did that, and I was thinking of Goodnight Tonight and Coming Up, he always did it in a kind of McCartney way. He never did it like Madonna does with an outside producer or the way that Lennon did in his 70s career. It was never welding his style to someone else's. It was like he would listen to the radio and go, I'll make my own. He never, you know, Macca never made a straightforward disco thumper. Goodnight Tonight and Coming Up are quite strange records. And I think, while I wouldn't call this disappointing, what's odd about this is it is even more than New. It's sort of gluing a production style on, whereas with the tracks on New, it pretty much sounded like he'd worked together with Mark Ronson and all those other people. I don't know why I said together in that voice.
I don't know. I liked it.
But yeah, thank you. So yeah, there we go. For you.
Yeah. Well, you think Ryan Tedder, as you say, he's the co-writer. He actually co-wrote a couple more songs, which we'll possibly come up to later. But he was working with Beyonce, Adele, J-Lo, Lady Gaga. So they're all names that you wouldn't immediately equate with Paul.
No, and there's nothing wrong with working with outside producers and fresh producers. But I don't think this song gelled. I think that's probably the best thing to say.
You used to be my confidant, my underneath the staircase friend. But I fell out of love with you and brought our romance to an end. I played with you throughout the day and told you every secret thought. Unlike my other so-called friends, you stood beside me as I fought.
Track 7, Confidant.
Isn't it a nice song? Yeah.
It's
a lovely song. It's a bit like Flicks Back Memory. It's a bit like Happy With You, except with a reverse sentiment. It's a really sweet, it's very like a reverse song of that, because again, it's the little childish metaphor. Serpents turned to bits of string and played like kittens in my hand. Butterflies in army boots. There's kind of a strangeness, though, because it is a song about someone who used to be a confidant. And even the bits about the happy reminiscence are about army boots and serpents. It's quite strange.
Well, Paul said this was a love song to his guitar.
Oh. Underneath the staircase, friend. That's good, rather than someone he's kept in a cellar.
Yeah. I played with you throughout the day and told you every secret thought. Unlike my other so-called friends, you stood beside me as I fought.
Blimey.
So I think that's a lot of... Because we're often talking about Paul's interviews. He never really gives much of himself away. And obviously doing this, I have to kind of research the timelines. And when you read the lyrics in conjunction of what he was up to, he gives so much away in his lyrics. And I love the fact he's, you know, this is what he said, you know, he wrote it for his guitar.
Yeah, well, I mean, when people write songs, all sorts of things come through. And while we're very grateful to his guitar for the magic powers it has, I'm not sure it's done all these things. And it is odd because you used to be my confidant. He doesn't seem to have fallen out with his guitar or any other instruments of late. So maybe he's apologising to it for not tuning it or something.
Or does that mean that he's now found peace, maybe with Nancy and his family, that he doesn't need the guitar as much?
Could be. I'm not entirely sure. I would say this song is about more than his guitar, though. I mean, it's interesting because it starts, if you see it in that light, it starts off as a song about, you know, being on your own as a kid, being able to talk to the guitar when things are difficult at home and when you haven't got friends around. But he's kind of taken it in a slightly different direction. You know, it's a bit like, because it hasn't got an ending. It's like, it used to be my confidant, and it's sort of lacking a last verse where it resolves in the manner of Puff the Magic Dragon, say, which I would argue is a similar song.
Yeah. It's a lovely open, I think it's open tuned, or he's detuned the E, which John did on Dear Prudence. I'm going to say something now you're really going to hate, but it does remind me of the Stone Roses, Your Star Will Shine.
I'll just have to take your word for that. I've never heard of that song. But it's entirely possible the Stone Roses might accidentally write a song with chords in it.
But it is beautiful. It's a real comfort blanket of a song. And it's, again, if you'd heard the singles, you wouldn't be expecting this.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Ladies and gentlemen, standing before you with something important to say. With some trepidation, I crave your attention, but I'm not gonna let anything get in my way. The message is simple, it's straight from my heart, and I know that you've heard it before. But what does it matter? We're in it together, and I'm not quitting while people are crying for more. People want peace. People want peace. A simple release from their suffering. People want peace.
Track 8, People Want Peace. This is the first of a few songs that references Dad Jim. That was the phrase he used to say.
Is it the first? No, I think he references his dad or... Oh, I thought he mentioned him on... Oh, no, he mentions his brother on I Don't Know. People Want... Yeah, I love People Want Peace. What I love is not only is it a song Paul's written before, but he even refers to the fact that he's written it before. Which is great, because every few years he'll write a peace song, and they never... Hope for Deliverance, and then there was that weird kind of trancey single he had out, whose name I forget. It was a one-off single, of course, Pipes of Peace, millions of songs. He even accidentally, maybe deliberately, quotes Lennon, I Know You've Heard It Before. But I love the way he's done it. He's done it in a kind of Fairground Barker style, in the kind of role, you know, ladies and gentlemen, standing here, something important to say, with some trepidation, I crave your attention. He's all Leonard Sachs in the good old days, but also a little bit of Magical Mystery Tour.
Yeah,
it's a really nice piece of work. You know, he's written these lines, we are the people, the voices of freedom, before. And like in any sort of vague protest song, it just sort of hangs there in space, you know. Everyone, I want your attention to say that we like peace. And that's it. Thank you very much. I've said it. Yeah, it's a classic Macca song. Probably, if the Beatles had done it, it would have probably been a huge single and we'd all be singing it around the campfire now. But it's sort of, again, with peace songs, not a lot to say about it.
Because he'd been to Palestine and Israel, and he was just speaking to people there, and there was a group there called One Voice, a political group, and they were just, that's basically what they said to him. I think lyrically as well, he was going back to Give Peace a Chance when you were saying about the verse. It's all this, ladies and gentlemen, it's sort of gibberish verse, and then Give Peace a Chance, people want peace. It's the same kind of message.
Yeah, it's like he's imagining himself giving a speech. Maybe he sat at a boring press conference thinking, I could do something with this. Yeah, I haven't really got a lot to say about it because it's, as a lot of Paul stuff, it is what it is.
Wanna give you my heart. Wanna tell you my story. Gonna take it to another level, you and me. Wanna give you my word. Let me give you my promise. I will try to make it happen, you can guarantee. Hand in hand, walking through life and making our plans. Hand in hand.
So track 9, it's Paul playing his dad's piano. It's Hand in Hand.
Yeah, Hand in Hand is a nice song. It's one where his voice is straining a bit, and that was an interesting thing about the tour, of course. He is not young. There are notes there that aren't quite as comfortable as before, and he has help from the rest of the band. But it sort of didn't matter. It's bizarre. He's doing things like Live and Let Die and Let It Be, which are quite hard for him now. But he manages to get away with it, and I think he gets away with it on this. I may have said before, but when I was first playing Kisses on the Bottom, my wife came in and said, "Is this Fred Astaire?" Because that's what his voice sounds like if you don't know who it is when he's doing songs within this range. And it's kind of affecting. He's never had a vulnerable voice when he was young. Lennon was the one who had the skill at sounding vulnerable. He could put it on like a hat. Whereas Paul always sounded far too confident. So it kind of works that this kind of song. And again, it's a lovely song. It's not full of particularly original lyrics. "We could make this dream come true. Want to give you my heart." But that again makes it sound more sincere.
I agree with his vocals as well. And I think live, people have been criticising his voice because he doesn't change the key of the song and he tries to hit it. Whereas I think a lot of the songs on here have been written for his vocal range.
Yeah.
So he sounds a lot more comfortable. And as you say, when it does get a bit high, it breaks, but it's beautiful because it does sound vulnerable, which we've not really heard with Paul.
And the fact that he writes songs in a different key now does mean that often the songs can sound a bit more muted, which lacks, so you don't get songs with the immediacy of Band on the Run or Jet so much now. Yeah. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with being your age and writing a song in your range that sounds like a person of your age singing that song.
And it's lovely. And it's a love song. He said, "As I wrote it, I was imagining me and Nancy about to go through life hand in hand."
Aww.
And we had a conversation before about Paul's love songs. And you think, Linda was one of the loves of his life. And you often wonder if there's sprinklings of Linda in any of these lyrics as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you write a song, not that I've ever tried, you do create, you sort of bring out a feeling rather than a person. And I think McCartney's feelings for Linda and for all the women who've been important in his life are in those songs. So who knows?
Track 10, Dominoes.
Yeah, this is another really lovely melody, really nice song. Again, really one about it's a song about the past disguised as the present, much like Hand in Hand. Hand in Hand is officially a lyric about the future, but it kind of sounds like a song about plans in the past and dominoes, which is a strange title to me. And it either means dominoes as in connections or dominoes as in dominoes being knocked down one by one as we go into the great oblivion. But yeah, in time we'll know, it's all a show. This is one of the best tunes on the album. I'm repeating myself slightly, but then this song does go round and round a bit, which is nice. Yeah, we'll soon forget we ever met and disagreed. We'll soon forget we ever met on its own. It's a slightly distressing lyric. No, it's nice. Mm. It's a lovely little vignette of a song. I really like it. Lines of dominoes are falling into place, ignoring everything in their way, and all the telephones keep calling. You could write a great thing about telephones in Paul McCartney songs. I can only think of Uncle Albert now, which I think he pretends to be a telephone. But telephones reminds me of, maybe it reminds him of Larkin, Philip Larkin's O Bard. Telephones crouch, getting ready to ring, which is one of the great images.
Mm. Paul said, so it was just a people song about how things really are all right, but they don't seem to be all right. And then I got this image of dominoes, when people line up those millions of dominoes and then they drop the first one, and it goes through this whole sequence. So I imagine that as being symbolic of life and how one little action can have such a big effect on this huge line of dominoes. Then when I recorded it, it seemed I wanted to do it very personally. It's a very personal song. Even though we go through this stuff and all these dominoes fall over and life goes on, in fact, in the end, it's okay.
It's okay is probably, if you had to sum up McCartney's songs in two words, it's okay is a sentiment that he keeps returning to. And it's interesting that he's writing these kind of spiralling songs now, because the end, again, memory almost full, the end of the beginning has this fantastic lyric about people doing this and this happens and then this happens and then people are singing and the songs they are singing are about this. And it's the same thing with this. You know, those Domino's videos are kind of circular. So I love the idea of Paul sitting down to watch Domino's videos. I wonder if he watches unboxing videos as well. But yeah, it's a lovely song. It's, again, a song written in age. I don't think he could have written it as a young man. It is a song of looking back, despite what he says.
Yeah. Well, it concludes, typical Paul, it's been a blast.
Yeah. I mean, that is such a McCartney phrase. Very few songwriters would be honest and say that their lives have been a blast.
Definitely one of the highlights for me. I think the verse uses the same descending chords as George Harrison's Isn't It a Pity?
Oh, that's same interesting. Chords.
I might have to do a mashup.
I would. But Isn't It a Pity sound is one of the most Beatly songs that George was ever able to write as well. The sort of Imagine style chords.
Back in Brazil, there lives a girl. Dreams of the future and a far, far better world.
Then we move on to track 11, Back in Brazil.
Yeah, this is one of those ones where it's like, what? It's quite, it's a great song. It's a perfectly good song. It's just mad. I forgot to look up Ichiban. But I noticed that it's back in Brazil. It's got a choir from Sao Paulo on it, which is nice. As well as being recorded in a Presbyterian church at some point, somebody. But yeah, it's one of those ones that just turns up. He's written a song about being back in Brazil. It's a little story song. It's a girl who meets a boy. And it's interesting that it also follows the very important Pete Waterman rules of writing a song, which is verse one, boy meets girl, verse two, boy loses girl, verse three, boy finds girl, which according to Pete is the, and it totally is, it's the formula for writing pop music. It's also a really interesting three-act structure for drama and comedy, but that's another thing. But yeah, I mean, this, it reminds me as a lyric of like Kid Creole songs, you know, so we raise a family as the clouds roll by. Again, it's a bit of the classic Ubla D lyric, everything's great, look at us. It just shows you what Paul's desires are in life, which is basically family and happiness, which sounds an odd thing to say, but not much popular music has been predicated on the idea of family and happiness. And Paul has been pushing family and happiness ever since he had a family. Yeah. God bless him. And this is just another song, another instalment in that, although this time set in Brazil, with Brazilian rhythmic elements to it.
Yeah, it's written when he was on tour in Brazil and he had a free day, nothing planned. He had a piano in his hotel room, so he got the little riff going, and his quote was, I got this idea of back in Brazil, there was this girl who dreams of a future, far, far better world, meets a man, blah, blah, blah. So it's a story about a couple and trials and tribulations. Things are going well. She plans a date, but he can't come because they've got him working late. So it's an imaginary story of two young Brazilian people, and it's kind of dancey. But I think it reminds me of Dress Me Up as a Robber and Secret Friend, that kind of carefree.
Yeah. He likes doing those every so often, and it's bizarre because we're so used to reading things into his music that when he does a completely inconsequential song, and again, it's a bit like For You on this, it stands out on this record, which is a good thing.
John Raine was on before and he was saying about it's strange how John's lyrics, if he's feeling miserable, he'll sing about how miserable he is, and whereas Paul's miserable, he'll talk about escaping somewhere.
Oh, that is interesting. Well, Paul's always been able to escape because it's like, when, as they say, wherever you go, there you are. And that was always a problem for John. You know, if he escaped, he was still there looking in the mirror being surly. Whereas Paul escapes, it's like, oh, hi, Paul, how are you? I'm fine. Let's go out. With Paul, it's the situation that's the problem, whereas with John, it's the being John that's the problem.
Yeah, bless him. And the Japanese ichiban word means great.
Okay.
Which is great.
That's fantastic. What Brazilian couple doesn't shout great in Japanese whenever they're having a bad day?
The first time I thought he was singing Itchy Bum, but no, it's Itchy
It's entirely bum. Possible with Paul these days. He's become more and more a creature of lust, writing songs about kisses on the bottom. You really don't know where he could be going with McCartney 3. It could just be like porn. I'm joking, of course.
Got the time, the inclination. I have answered your invitation. I'll be leaving in the morning. Watch me go. I don't know where the wind is blowing. Got directions to where I'm going. Nothing certain, that's the only thing I know.
And then we move on to track 12, Do It Now. Reminiscent of Put It There. This was another phrase used by Paul's dad.
Yeah. Again, I don't really have much to say about this one. It's just a very Paul song with a very Paul sentiment. In fact, I have nothing to say about it.
Oh, right. But I think musically, it reminds me of Brian Wilson's Wonderful.
Wonderful's a nice song. That always reminds me of Wanderlust by Paul McCartney, which is one of the most underrated songs. And Brian Wilson, in fact, covered it on McCartney's covers album. And it's one of the few moments when it's like, oh, they finally match the song with the person. None of which helps us in our exploration of the song Do It Now. But it's always nice to think of Brian Wilson.
Again, this slow drip marketing campaign, Capital were pushing Egypt Station. For some reason, there was a photo that they put up, and apparently it's fake, and there was a 3 on there. So I immediately got it in my head that Egypt Station might be McCartney 3. So my expectations were going to be a very downbeat, lo-fi album. And they were shattered because it is effectively a 76-year-old man doing a really great modern pop album.
Yeah.
But I think a few of the comments at the time were, you know, is Paul trying too hard to be relevant? And I think he's mentioned in an interview about McCartney 3 that he's deliberately not trying too hard. That was his quote. So yeah, I think you said before, each album is a reaction to the previous album.
Yeah, and I think with this one, because he's stuck at home, although how stuck Paul McCartney will be at home with his facilities, with McCartney 3. I mean, McCartney 2 was interesting because it was all the new technology, and so it was a very forward-looking album. Whereas now, you know, he's at home with Elvis Presley's old bass, so it's probably going to be less forward-looking, which is a shame. I'd really like it if it was Dark Wave or whatever it is the young people listen to now. But I'm sure it's going to be great.
On to my favourite track on the album. It's track 13, Caesar Rock.
Yeah, this is mad. This is back to the days when Paul would put on a quiff and a pink jacket. I'm referring, of course, to the 80s when he's doing albums like Give My Regards to Broad Street and hanging out with Dave Edmunds slightly. It's always nice when Paul does a rocker because, of course, he can't help making it poppy. But this is a nice melodic rock and roll tune with a bizarre pun about Caesar Rock and She's a Rock. And she got loyalty like the royalty, which is the kind of, frankly, terrible lyric that he was famous for writing in the early 70s. The kind of thing where you go, yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, does it mean anything? Like, I'm the worst, John just wrote the words and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, all right, mate, that means it doesn't mean anything. If it doesn't mean anything, it doesn't mean anything. But it's a jaunty song. It's very Paul. And yeah, if I'm back to school, she's got to be my favourite teacher. There's such a lot for me to learn. Oh, God, it's a Randy Paul song.
It is.
We are presuming here.
He needs some bromide.
Oh, goodness me. Bromide, that's proper 50s rock and roll. Probably rhymes with a lot of things as well. But yeah, he's written a sexy song about his wife being a rock, which is basically writing a rockabilly song called She's Reliable, Ooh Yeah. But no, it's a
and
great
song.
And she's
got matching teeth.
Matching teeth, which is, she got matching teeth. I mean, where... that... If you had to do a quiz, which member of the Beatles wrote She Got All the Looks, She Got All the Books, She Got Matching Teeth, you would say this is from Come Together.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a very Lennon-esque line. But it's not. It's Paul. And next time we see a picture of Nancy Chauvel, we are going to have to look at it and see how she is really old. I mean, I don't have matching teeth, so I understand the issue here. But then I suppose if you're American, which his wife is, then you probably have got matching teeth.
It's something I never thought of, I have to be honest.
Oh, I grew up during
love this song so much. I think he's veering into sort of fireman territory.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I've never got on so well with the fireman.
Oh, right, okay. Because I think on paper as well, it's not dissimilar to Temporary Secretary. It's those two minor chords bouncing back together. But it's psychedelic, it's atmospheric, and it gets really funky in there at some points. I absolutely adore this. It's so hidden away with crappy lyrics and he doesn't care. And absolute highlight for me. I'm hoping that McCartney 3 is going to be like this.
Yeah. I think another thing to say at this point is that this is one of those albums that it's got a lot of songs on it, which means there's a big tendency to sort of veer. It seems to me that side one is more coherent and side two is more left over, not in terms of quality control, they're all excellent, but the plan kind of fades away a bit because side two, it's very random. You know, we'll talk about the next song in a moment, that's the way it goes, but you know, Back in Brazil and Caesar Rock on the same side as Do It Now, it's, and then the finale medley, which is fun to talk about, it's very chaotic.
I don't know, Is Caesar Rock and Back in Brazil, are they a bit of light relief before? Because some of the songs are quite heavy after this.
There's an element of that. But it does strike me as odd. And yeah, and now we move on to...
Despite repeated warnings of dangers up ahead, the captain won't be listening to what's been said.
Track 14, Despite Repeated Warnings.
I absolutely love this. This is a centrepiece. This is, in your little CD booklet, pretty much the lyrics take up an entire side of cardboard. It's remarkable because it's funny, it's very McCartney, all captains and engineers, and Despite Repeated Warnings reminds me of another song title, which I'll come to by looking it up in a minute. Basically, it's his Trump song. I don't think there's too much theory going on there.
No.
It's all about the ineptitude of a captain whom we need to get rid of him. Yes, we can do it now. We went to the captain, we told him to turn around. He laughs in our faces, says that we're mistaken. It's the will of the people to get rid of him. It's an impassioned song done in a jaunty tone. Again, a bit like the peace song earlier on in the album, People Want Peace.
Yeah.
It's got that slightly quirky, jaunty tone, as though he's not going in your face. He's going, now listen, you know, oh, don't want to cause any fuss, but just thinking, if you can't see me doing the hands at home, you're very lucky. But it's an amazing song because it's a little rock opera. Every so often, Paul does these little 10cc vignette, three-act rock operas. We know he's a big 10cc fan. And it would really fit on that, except it's got passion, it's got a degree of anger. He's basically saying, what the fuck is going on here, people?
How can we stop him? Grab the keys and lock him up. If we can do it, we can save the day. The engineer lives with his wife and daughter, Janet. But he misses them so.
It's fantastically done. I really consider this a high point of the album.
Yeah.
However absurd, that's the phrasing on Press to Play. Yeah. One of my favourite, by the way, Paul McCartney songs. A really same sort of thing. A really angry song. It's an animal rights song, I seem to believe.
Mm.
Really angry song, but couched in these slightly distant, effete use of words. But yeah, despite repeated warnings, a classic song.
Yeah. You think sometime in New York City, John was, you know, openly naming John Sinclair or whoever he was singing about, he would openly name. You know now he would do a song called Trump. But Paul has created this little story about the captain heading towards the icebergs. And it makes it all the more powerful, I think, because it's, you know, in 20 years' time, it will probably be relevant to somebody else.
Yeah, and it's just the way, you know, Lennon would be a real... As we know, McCartney's only done it once with Give Ireland Back to the Irish, but Lennon will be a real nail on the head. Let's get rid of this bad man. But McCartney's just been honest. He's saying, what can we do to stop this foolish plan going through? Which is pretty much how people felt at the start of Trump's four-year term. You know, we're stuck with this.
Well, there's the line, how can we stop him? Grab the keys and lock him up. If we can do that, we can save the day.
It's a possible reference to the locker-up thing from Trump's campaign. Classic McCartney, though. The engineer lives with his wife and daughter, Janet.
Janet.
Very strange.
Rhymes with planet.
But, no. As I say, a surprising song to turn up here, but really well done, really well put together. Something that obviously means a lot to McCartney. Probably never get played live, but it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's very cinematic as well. It starts off quite emotional, and then it veers into... in a much faster song. I'm with Paul because Paul was right about Alan Klein. So I'm sticking with him on climate change.
Yeah, I think Paul's generally right about things, even if he does couch his opinions in vague terms. But good work, Paul.
Then we come to what is effectively the Sgt. Pepper reprise.
Yep.
Station 2.
Also the Band on the Run reprise. It always comes at this point before the final track.
Yeah, and it's effectively a choir. And then the riff into track 16, which is a medley of Hunt You Down, Naked and Sea Link. Down.
Yeah, first of all, I just want to talk about the return of the medley tradition. There was a bit of a medley allegedly on New, and he doesn't do medleys a lot, but he tends to do them quite honestly, as on Red Rose Speedway, when he's got three bits of songs that he can't be bothered to finish and they seem vaguely connected. Hunt You Down's great track, slightly alarming. Don't wait till they unleash the hounds, they'll follow your trail and hunt you down. Okay, fine, but slight element of Run for Your Life, which is not quite clear who is tracking down the little girl. It does rather suggest that Paul is going to hunt down a woman and trap her forever in his vegetarian cellar.
Yeah, I love the gritty guitar in it, and the brass as well works so well on this song, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the... It's been pointed out before, but he's someone who takes a lot more effort over trifles than some people take on their big work. So on Red Rose Speedway, that's an album which is produced as though it were Dark Side of the Moon or Abbey Road, even on the slight, as in small, little songs. And this particular medley is actually pretty hardcore. It's pretty gnarly and jagged at times, and it's great.
I've been naked since I was born to follow you.
Naked Since the Day I Was Born.
It's another nifty little number. It's mentioned Mike McCartney again. But yeah, it's a fun lyric. Life's a basket, but I have no other. I've been naked since I was born. An interesting, revelatory lyric. Slightly mad lyric, but it's great. Don't really have a lot to say about this, so I'm going to move on to Ceiling. One of those great snarly McCartney guitar pieces in the tradition of Zoo Gang, in the tradition of Let Me Roll It, in the tradition of something else I've completely forgotten. It's probably this track. It's really good. Is it a reference to Cufflink from London Town? Probably not. Is it a reference to the Sea Link Ferry Company? Almost certainly not. Maybe it's just in the key of C. I don't know. But it's a really corking way to just come out of this album and just go, yeah, for you, I'm Paul McCartney.
It is. So that it's a fantastic album. I think what happened after this, there were a few other versions that suddenly emerged, one of which was the Target edition, which had a couple of bonus tracks. And then months and months later, there was the Travelers edition and Explorers edition, which basically had a bonus disc with even more songs on, plus a few live performances from Abbey Road and The Cavern and Lipper and Grand Central Station. So there's a few on there. I don't know if there's any that jump out for you.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of sort of fine, vaguely fillery titles like Get Started and Getting Enough, see why they didn't make the album. But 62nd Street, I seem to recall being really cool. But the one for me is Frank Sinatra's Party. We had the greatest time. I love the tradition of Paul reminiscing songs, and they're normally like, well, I think they're called early days. They're normally about, that was me, the early days of the Beatles. Frank Sinatra's Party is interesting because it could be a true story, probably is, maybe not, but it is just this vignette of what it was like to be in the Beatles when you weren't being in a van screamed at or writing songs, which was being at this insane celebrity party. And it's always very hard for when you were a Beatle, I would imagine, to say, you know, who's the big celebrity? Elvis for them. Frank probably was. But generally, you're like, I mean, sometimes Paul will talk about folk, you know, it's like, Mitzi Gaynor. Do you remember her? Exactly. You're like, why are you so angry about Mitzi Gaynor? I don't even really know who she is. And it's like, there's that famous picture of them with Cassius Clay, now Muhammad Ali, that Macca can't remember. And you think, what an astonishing life you have if you can't remember posing for a photo where Muhammad Ali knocks you out.
Yeah.
And so this is just Frank Sinatra's Party is really worth getting the Explorers edition for. I think I own, but haven't played the extra live tracks because I don't really need them. But no, Explorers edition is worth getting. There's only 6 songs on it and you only own one of them already. So why not?
Yeah. I think the Sinatra one, especially, he's always veering into Gorillaz territory.
There's a collaboration he should do. He should do something with Gorillaz.
Yeah, but there was history with Frank. On Maureen Starkey's 22nd birthday, Frank recorded a personalised version of The Lady is a Tramp. Thankfully reworded The Lady is a Champ.
That's not very nice.
Kind of him.
Maureen is a Tramp.
Happy birthday. And this was the first single. They actually printed it up to receive an Apple Records catalogue number.
Wow.
One in existence. So Frank was on Apple briefly.
That's fantastic. And of course there's the always told story and something written by Lennon and McCartney. Because I always think, yeah, fair enough. If you think about it, it probably was.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not literally, but yeah, I think if George had been a Jerry and the Pacemakers, he wouldn't have come up with something.
No, yeah, it was osmosis, wasn't it, I guess?
It's totally osmosis. It's always I mean, the sad thing for George Ramling a bit is that, like, basically, his songs were never going to get accepted unless they sounded like the Beatles. And if they sounded like the Beatles, well, they didn't need any of those. But there we go. Yeah. Frank Sinatra, folks.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, just going through a few of the songs on the Explorers edition, which was, I think, Get Started, for me, it's surprising this was left off. It's got similar, I think it was, it's got similar descending chords as Dominoes. But it's a real sunshine acoustic pop song. And, you know, it's got a false ending. And I think Nothing for Free, which was a single. And again, that was strangely released 10 months after the album. and it was another Ryan Tedder co-write. And but for me, 62nd Street is just fantastic. It really reminds me of Simon and Garfunkel's, obviously entitled 59th Street Bridge song.
Yeah, it's just a few blocks on from there, really.
Yeah, but I don't get why this wasn't on the album. Well, you can make my life complete if you say that we could meet for a minute on 62nd
Street. No, it's weird now, because Paul brings out these odd little singles here and there, and they don't really get the promotion, and you often miss them. You know, sometimes I'll just go on iTunes and like, oh, there's a Paul McCartney single from 8 months ago, which was not wouldn't have happened in the old days when Frank was on Apple.
Absolutely. So thanks very much, David. I really appreciate that. As I say, there's some divisive views about this album, but I think it's a fantastic album. But what would you say to people who have been humming and hawing about buying it?
That I would say to those people that they are wrong, that this is a fantastic album, contains some of Paul's best performances and best songs. Some of it is easily up there with his best work, and I'll include the Beatles in that. And if you have stopped your Paul McCartney collection at, I don't know, pipes apiece, then you should seriously think again. It's a brilliant record. Egypt Station is a 5-star album in my book.
Wow. David Quantick, thank you so much.
Chris, thank you.